I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Ana Gallegos-Reinhardt. She is the director of Warehouse 21, and we have two Warehouse participants, Alex Monasterio and John Santos. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Hi.
Welcome. Hello.
Great to have you all. Warehouse 21 has become an institution in Santa Fe. You, Ana, were one of the original founders, is that correct?
Well, first of all, Warehouse 21 is a spinoff of the Center for Contemporary Arts Teen Project, which existed prior to Warehouse 21 being its own nonprofit. But so we are a spinoff of that program. However, Warehouse 21 is now 15 years old. We just celebrated our 15th anniversary through a variety of special events last year, including the Beirut concert.
Right.
And it's been an interesting ride. Managing and facilitating and building a new center for Santa Fe and for 15 years.
Now, the old center, the actual warehouse, which was kind of more warehouse-like, mm-hmm. was a friendly, dilapidated old building mm-hmm. very close to where the current, mm-hmm. or on the site, I think, where
sure.
the current one is now. What was that space like, and then why did you decide to build this really deluxe new space, mm-hmm. two stories and everything?
Mm-hmm. The warehouse that we resided in was a 3,500 square foot warehouse that we rented from the city, and it was small, quaint, funky, culturally relevant, holes in the walls, living with the mice. I mean, we were in a blighted area of the rail yard. And we also had a large parking lot that was our space, our property. So it provided a lot of ownership for many years. That whole generation was really kicked off a new energy in the arts
yeah.
back in the 80s and 90s. So it built Warehouse 21. The youth creativity built Warehouse 21. In 1996, the city of Santa Fe bought the property from Catalyst Corporation on the rail yard property so as to prevent big boxes to move into the community. And so as a result, when you do that, you go through a master plan, and it takes a lot of community planning. And
thank you, City of Santa Fe.
Yes. City of Santa Fe is still paying that money off, bond money and et cetera. And so as a result of that master planning, the rail yard was no longer going to be a blighted environment. It was going to be the new arts and cultural district of Santa Fe in downtown, in the downtown area. So we all knew it was going to be a lot more technologically oriented and updated in the arts and technology, because it was going to be like the new plaza, right? So warehouse was either going to have to be demolished, that building, because they said there's going to be a road that would be developed in the future, and you needed to move forward on new plans for Warehouse 21. So instead of dissolving the organization or moving to another side of town, there had already been about 17 years of history of youth ownership on the rail yard. So we decided to try and earn a placement there on the rail yard, which we did. And as a result, demolition occurred eventually.
It must have been sad.
It was very sad. It's like watching your favorite treehouse get torn down. And a lot of people watched it, and a lot of people were very tearful about it, and people were just shocked when they saw the rubble. And, you know, I actually worked with the demolition man who hauled away the building. I came every morning and got artifacts from the rubbish, which we have that's
wow.
saved, and buried big pieces of the building under the new construction. So a lot of all that stuff was moved from the demolition site. But
why? Just to have like the vibe of the old building
absolutely.
Under the new one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, the building, especially if you go into the concert hall, you'll feel the energy, because there's parts of the building, the old building, underneath the building. So, but you know, we had to move forward, and that put me into a position of starting to have to raise millions of dollars for a new building. Had I ever been in a capital campaign before? No. It's all hands-on learning, really, and it's about having a belief in the youth, in the future, you know, the present, whatever. And it's about building relationships to raise the money. And we were part of the community process, and the community helped us build this building. So it was a $2.4 million bricks and mortar project, another million just in other costs that were related to a campaign. So the older building was demolished in April of 2007, and the new building was constructed and up, and we opened in June of 2008. So things went very fast, although the whole planning process was a good 10 years.
Let's hear from our two young men who are with us today. John Santos, how did you get involved in Warehouse 21, and what do you do there?
I originally came to Warehouse 21 moving from California, Northern California, where I was living in the Bay Area and doing a lot of work with nonprofits out there, similar to what I'm doing here, and painting murals. I was living in San Francisco, in Oakland, and working with a nonprofit called Presida Eyes Mural Arts and Visitor Center in the Mission, and I learned a lot about what community meant, and a lot about how nonprofits kind of work from doing work out there. And I was teaching about break dancing in a lot of the public schools in Oakland and in Berkeley, and I made my way out here in 2003, and Warehouse 21 was just like what I guess I kind of gravitated to, because I was so used to it in the Bay Area, and there were walls to paint and things like that, because I'm a graffiti artist and mural artist, and that's originally how I got involved, and I just kind of continued with the same kind of work that I was doing in California here at Warehouse 21 in New Mexico. I just kept going with it. So
have you seen in your experience both in California and here that thing that sort of people talk about, but I mean I'd love somebody to talk about it firsthand, of kids maybe going down a destructive path and then channeling their prodigious energy into art and community instead of destructive ways of living?
Have I seen that here?
Here or in California?
Yeah, I mean, I was that, you know. I was kind of running the streets and doing a lot of graffiti art and just up to no good, you know, just like all teenagers sometimes get into. And in the more urban environments like San Francisco and Oakland, it's really harsh out there, and I see a lot of those same elements here. So
what do you mean by those same elements?
Just drugs and violence and a lot of the social issues that exist in communities all around the country. But just on a smaller scale in here in New Mexico. So I've seen that. And it's in Santa Fe, it's kind of a unique situation, because Santa Fe is so close knit, it's so small, that places like Warehouse 21 or any other nonprofit organizations that address those kind of youth social issues have more of an impact. You
right.
know what I mean? Because it's such a smaller place. You go to San Francisco or Oakland or LA, it's just huge. Or even Albuquerque, it's such a big city, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think we're very fortunate to have these things here in Santa Fe. We, you know, it's, it makes a huge difference.
Alex Monasterio, how did you get involved with Warehouse, and what do you do with the organization?
Well, I guess, you know, I'm a kid in Santa Fe, and in a place where it's kind of based around adults and tourism and that kind of art, it's always as a musician, I kind of gravitated towards Warehouse, because that seemed like the place where I could go to do my own art, as opposed to, you know, the stuff you see downtown.
What kind of art do you do? What kind of music?
Oh, what I do is I write and record. I've been doing a lot of my recording at Warehouse. I just write music, and I do concerts every once in a while.
Do you play an instrument?
I play a lot, actually. But a lot of the time, I don't know, I've always considered myself more of a songwriter than a, you know, virtuoso at any instrument.
And so with at Warehouse, are you working with other musicians and, you know, playing in bands, doing stuff together?
You know, I've never been great at playing in bands in particular. I've just always kind of liked having control, I guess. But what I like to do is I like to work with other types of artists where I don't have to, you know, it's either I have all the control or I'm helping out somebody else. So, like, I work with Santo sometimes. I work on beats and, you know, we've kind of been working on that kind of stuff. And, you know, I work in the studio and try and I'm working on getting authorized to record other artists up there. And, you know, you were talking earlier about how kind of Santa Fe's got that, or Santa Fe and California have that kind of growing up in an environment where there's negative influences on the kids. But here I think it's kind of powerful that we have that stuff because, like you said, it becomes channeled into art, and that's basically what Warehouse is. Warehouse is kind of that embodiment of all the angst put together and made into art.
There's a lot of different kinds of angst, too. It's like angst that comes from the really serious social problems you were talking about, and also just middle class looking at what this world is and how we adults have been destroying it for so long and what world we're growing up into, yeah. What world you guys are growing up into.
I think what's relevant in regards to youth culture is that art reflects the trends of youth culture. Oftentimes you can see and feel angst or not in lyrics, in music, in the artwork that young people present, fashion, you know? They're the ones that end up creating the new fashion lines that you see, you know, in the stores. And so streetwise, a lot of that is, you know, cultivated and put into an art form. And that's what we do with a lot at Warehouse 21 is allow that artistic expression to be productive. And, you know, it allows young people to express themselves in a way that they can't do anywhere else.
It also sounds like you're learning a whole bunch of what are essentially professional skills, technical skills, as well as artistic skills.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm training in running concerts and sound and recording up in the studio, and I'm about to start doing some screen printing. It's more than anything, it's Warehouse is there to be a resource and a place where the art can be put on display. And like Anna was saying, it's definitely kind of a representation of what of the times, I guess, because, you know, you look back to, like, Renaissance or that kind of time, you see, like, the whole ideal man thing popping up in the painting and the less religious art and more scientific art, and it kind of displays where we are as a race at the time, I guess. It's and I think Warehouse is kind of that way, and because the real art is kind of the art that's not really found in huge museums, but the art that's found later, and when people look back and see Santa Fe for what it was at the time, I guess.
John Santos, talk about your experience of not only working as an artist, but also mentoring the younger people who come into Warehouse.
I guess, I don't know, art's always been, like, there for me my entire life growing up, you know what I mean? And it just was presented to me, like, funny, but in the early 80s, when I was a little kid, you know, I saw some graffiti art on the wall at my school, and I just kind of looked at it and wondered what it was. And there were some break dancers that came to, like, the last day of school performance type of thing, and those things really stood out in my mind. And as I grew older and started to go out on my own into the city, I would see more of it, and I always gravitated to that. It always kind of just presented itself to me in, like, the form of hip-hop, like the elements of hip-hop, like graffiti writing, breakdancing, and emceeing and DJing, and I mean, that culture and all those elements together, just how they work together and everything, just kind of really just changed my life, you know what I mean? Like, and you'll hear from a lot of other people who get involved with hip-hop, and a lot of people from New Mexico even will say how, like, you know, if it wasn't for hip-hop and being able to express myself through graffiti art or on the mic or breakdancing, you know, I'd probably be dead or in jail or something like that, you know what I mean? It's like, it's very common to hear that. So that was always my experience, because it was either that or going toward a more kind of self-destructive path because of just the social dynamic of not really having very many choices, you know what I mean? Like, school never really worked for me as like an institution or the public school system. So, you know, my focus wasn't there. And then just in the environments that I grew up, you know, just for survival, there was just a lot of like gang activity. And then there was always like hip hop, you know what I mean? Like, there was always some breakdancers or graffiti artists or MCs. And that, I really kind of warmed up to that, I guess, because it was more of an empowering kind of expression, more so than like gang culture. And
it's so crazy, awesome, amazing to watch. I don't know whether you're one of those guys who spins on your head and things like that, or what kind of contortions you put yourself into, but it's an amazing dance form.
Yeah, and it really taps into you on a deeper level than just what it has become today, because, you know, it's really kind of a tribal kind of thing, all those elements really break down to either art, music, dance, poetry, which we all possess as just individuals. I think that's probably what engaged me the most, you know what I mean, just kind of on that deeper level.
Are you teaching that to the younger kids at Warehouse?
Yeah, I've always taught that. I mean, when I had got arrested painting trains in California and thrown in jail and stuff, part of my restitution was to do community service. And I went to, you know, San Francisco and I painted murals. And part of my restitution was to go to a graffiti class. And I was like, I thought it was a joke. And then next thing you know, I'm getting paid to teach classes. You know, I'm going city to city in the Bay Area, teaching breakdancing and graffiti and making a living off it, paying my rent, you know. And it was like a dream to be able to do that, because nothing else had really taught me that, you know. Like, the schools always taught me that you had to pick up something to a trade or something to survive, and I learned otherwise, you know what I mean? So just being able to have that experience and show people that, you know, if you do have a passion, you could follow that passion and it will provide for you. And it's only places like Warehouse and you know, other nonprofits that offer those opportunities for youth that really support that, you know what I mean? And
do you see people who are, I mean, I think in every culture, no matter how privileged or no matter how oppressed, you've got people who emerge as artists, because that's their gift, that's their inclination, that's who they are. Mm-hmm. And whatever forms are available are the forms that their expression takes. And so graffiti art is very much of a, it's very much of a choice for a lot of people. But do you see also in yourself and others people with that artistic gift going outside of the form of graffiti art, learning other, you know, sculpture or oil painting or other things like that?
Yeah, I see that. But it's like the graffiti artist is just taking the art form or the technique or the foundation of graffiti writing, which is stylizing letters, and doing a sculpture of stylized letters, or doing an oil painting of stylized letters, you know?
Yeah.
Expressing in that way.
I mean, but do they ever go to art school and then have to learn sort of more still life and drawing from the figure and stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it leads to that, you know, and it's just a matter of the artist, you know, wanting to do that. But there's a lot of, like, graffiti artists around the world that have really become successful in mainstream art.
So you, Alex Monasterio, are not in school right now. So what are you doing full-time? I mean, are you doing your art, your music?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, I've been set up in my garage and at Warehouse and just writing music and, you know, promoting shows for the place. It's, you know, I just do what I can to keep busy in terms of music. And then lately I've been working on starting up like a little mini magazine type thing of local music, because there's not really a publication that solely focuses on that right now. So, you know, really just trying to keep busy.
Anna, one of the things that's happened in Warehouse when you've had this bigger building, which has a couple of full-on theater spaces in them, is you've gotten quite a bit of not youth theater, grown up, older, whatever you want to call it, people doing their performances, and I've been to a bunch of those. How do they mix? Is there are they talking to each other, or is it sort of like, okay, the grown-ups are here, rent it out, then they go home? I mean, what's it like?
Warehouse has its own events, and of course we also collaborate with the community. And the Black Box Theater is one of the venues that the community plan really needed on the rail yard that the community was asking for, not only for just Warehouse 21, but for more full collaboration with others who were interested in performing arts and the use of a Black Box Theater. So, you know, with the events I think you're talking about, like maybe adults with Santa Fe Rep, perhaps drawing, attracting an older crowd. You know, they do hire some young people as well to learn stage management and assistant directing, so it gives teenagers another technical skill to learn about when there is professional theater. And it's also helps to subsidize Warehouse 21 when everything else is really very free or low fee.
Right. Now, do you have a lot of adult mentors and leadership working at Warehouse?
You know, it varies. I mean, I would say there's a significant amount of alums there. You know, like Santos, I've known him since he was a teenager, and we have young people in their 20s and 30s right now that are now doing the sound and the recording and the a variety of different programs at Warehouse 21.
I suppose if you're highly involved, you don't want to leave when you're 21 years old or when you turn 22.
It depends. You know, some people move on. Some people feel like they're too old to be involved, but that's not the case. The goal of this new facility was for real expansion of Warehouse 21. You never are too old to be involved at Warehouse 21. Come and be a mentor. Learn to teach. You know, we can, you know, some, and many have become staff, you know, so.
And youth media
youth
project.
Advisory board members and such.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And youth media project is now housed there.
Yes. We renovated an area for an office, and they're utilizing that and working their nonprofit out of that at the moment. Youth media project, it was very compatible to what we want to do.
Did they have a show on KSFR, ladies and gentlemen?
Yes, they're right before our radio show at 8 o'clock on the first and third Wednesday of every month. And we've been collaborating for years with them anyway, and she needed a space, and we had a space available, so it was very ideal. They have programs in the media arts, and it brings a new program to Warehouse 21 as well.
So anything else that you all want to talk about before we go today?
Well, I just wanted to mention one thing about Alex. When I recognized what kind of skill and music he was playing, I asked him to perform before the Beirut show. So he was the preset act for the Beirut show.
Nice.
And I think that was your first
that
concert.
That was my first real concert. And you know, that's kind of what the city needs, is for more kids to kind of get out of their garage and make more music. Because, I mean, you know, before this I didn't do anything, and then now I'm writing music like on a daily basis. I've been hired to score films up in California, do that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's taking off, and it only took one show to kind of get me into that process. It's again, like what Santos was saying, the kids need to realize that if they actually have a passion, they can live off of it. They can go into it and not have to worry about, you know, will I make enough to survive, as long as they're actually passionate about what they're doing. And, you know, that's kind of what makes Santa Fe as a place great. It's always been really accepting of art as a lifestyle rather than just a hobby. And, you know, yeah, I guess that's really what Warehouse has given to me more than anything. It's just kind of that realization that art can be my lifestyle, and that music can be what I base the rest of my life off of.
Anything else before we go?
Hip-Hop Alliance.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll plug the Hip-Hop Alliance. It's a program that I started at the community college, which actually a lot of the things that I'm doing there have been growing like so fast, like so much has gone on and it's starting to, you know, spill over into Warehouse 21. Like, we have a radio show at KSFR as well. It's called Freestyle 101, which is a freestyle rap hip-hop radio show that, you know,
when's that on?
That's a monthly show. Right now we're working with Camino Nuevo, which is a project with Santa Fe Art Institute that goes into the Albuquerque Detention Center, and we're gonna record a show there. We're hoping, we're waiting on that, and it's, I guess there's a all girl rap group up in there. We're gonna go in there and do some freestyle raps, and then and you know, since we've gotten more participants in that, we've recorded a show at Warehouse. We're gonna start doing more recording there. We're working on programming for SFCC TV Channel 16 to start recording rap videos and music videos, doing that at Warehouse too with some of the bands that come to Warehouse. We're going to start airing those videos on the local channel, and we're actually starting chapters of the Hip Hop Alliance within the a couple middle schools and high schools in town, which all kind of come together at a big event called Battle of the Schools, where we have a big hip-hop battle, and then all that is just kind of a thing where we have individual roles for youth and people who want to be involved in the hip-hop culture that kind of lead back to the community college as a resource, you know what I mean? So
if people want to find out more about the Hip Hop Alliance, should they look on the Warehouse 21 website, or is there a different site?
They could just go to Facebook, John Santos. You'll see the little Hip Hop Alliance logo on there, and it has stuff that we've been doing.
I'll put a link on my page on Santa Fe Radio Cafe also.
Yeah,
to yours.
For sure. And so that's a really kind of big thing that I'm working on with like a lot of different organizations and nonprofits in the city right now that are helping build that. And you know, that was something that I got to give credit to Warehouse 21 too, because you know, if it wasn't for me being able to be involved with Warehouse 21 from the time that I was introduced to Warehouse 21 till now, you know, I might have been working at Walmart this whole time or something. You know what I mean? Like, but, you know, it's just because of these opportunities in the community that helped me keep on doing what I'm doing, you know?
Warehouse 21 is on the web at warehouse21.org. Ana Gallegos Reinhardt is the executive director, and we've been talking to Alex Monasterio and John Santos. Thank you all so much for being here, and keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Issa Niafaga. He is an artist, a performer, a global community organizer, and this Friday, the 24th of February, at El Museo Cultural, he will be doing a benefit called Art for Health. It's a whole great, fun extravaganza of dance and art and play and music.
Hello,
and everything. Hello, it's great to have you back on the show.
Okay, thank you for having me.
So you have been doing all kinds of activities all over the world for some years. Let's remind people of your background, or for people who haven't come across you or your work before on this show or in other places. You are from Cameroon, Africa. You are a political cartoonist, among other things, and you were imprisoned and tortured for your political cartooning and eventually escaped Cameroon.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. And what I have also to add is that I didn't want to live in the costume of the victim when I was in Europe in exile in Paris for 10 years. So I decided to come to America to be someone different, to be a community organizer, not being a victim that people see like, oh my God, you got tortured and we're so sorry for you.
Right.
I just wanted to leave that costume and take that experience to move on and teach people how they can, you know, create their own process of resilience, like like how I did, you know, through art, because I think art is also a very good healing process.
And so you came to the United States, and you've been doing these really interesting performances, of which I've seen a number. What is it that you are doing? Like, what does it look like?
It looks like something that I do in the community, because, first of all, it's an art therapy for me, but I don't want to do it in the studio alone. So I like to be in the public, and I want the children to see it, and people who love art and who have a sensibility to connect with art can see it, so their own process can start. So what I usually do, I use live music to paint my body in the first part of the performance, paint my face, my hands, and sometimes my feet. And then...
And you paint them often in a kind of stripes.
Yes, because it's a language. In one hand, you have a dot, and dots represent people. So each dot is one person, and it's on one hand. Another hand, you have a stripes and line, and those are communication and energy that drive human, like, to connect between each other.
So dots and lines and the symbolic qualities of those, is that a like traditional African type of symbolism?
It is. It's inspired by my culture, the Tikar people. But I also started, you should know that I also started creating art with women. There was shaman women in my village. We paint with mud. And then it's a community art. So I don't see art process like something that I do alone. Like, I'm not a selfish artist, so I like to share it with the community. So then the process starts right there in front of people. So I accomplish all the piece inspired by live music. And also in this situation, people get nervous. I get nervous myself because I don't know how the piece is going to look at the end. Because it's also like a life, you know. If we come back here to do the same show tomorrow, nothing will be the same.
Right.
So everything is carried by live music during the performance. If I don't feel like the energy is so great, I can just paint one color brown, which is weird, but people enjoy the movement around, the way I move with the color and the way I responded to the live music and people who are around. So I paint on energy. That's how the performance is going to be.
So you start with yourself and painting yourself, and then you end up painting a canvas which is on the ground.
Right. We're local musicians, so I can include any kind of music also, because I think music is very, very interesting language that is represented in all cultures, you know. And you don't see music. You can't touch music, but you can feel it. So it's anywhere, you know. You can wake up in the morning, hear the birds singing, and then you know that you're going to have an incredible day. And then we want human to create that kind of sound, so I can paint on it, and people can see that. And sometimes people ask me, do you think I can do that myself? Can you allow me to do that when I go back home? I say, sure, that's what you came here for.
Yeah.
So we are raising funds for that. And there are going to be also other artistic expression. So we're going to have storytelling. We're going to have food, African food, and we're going to have also workshop for children. So people are allowed to bring their children and support these women in Cameroon.
So it's 5 to 8:30, and ladies and gentlemen, if you bring your children, they will have lots to do. You will not have to babysit them.
That's right, because I'm also an art educator. So these last months I've been in Santa Fe teaching art in schools with some art teacher in the community, and they love it. Then the project's going to end soon, and everybody's so sad because I'm going to be leaving soon, and I'll be far away from here, and everybody's just like, oh my God, we won't see you again. I say, I'll come back next fall.
Yeah, you'll be back next fall, and we'll talk about that in a minute, because I want to hear what you're doing with the children. But let's talk for a moment. It's called Art for Health Benefit, and you have been for years raising money to bring things like wheelchairs and other kinds of medical aid, lots of different kinds of medical aid, to the village that you're from in Cameroon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a very moving and pretty intense photo portfolio on Facebook of some of the people whom you're helping, people whose faces and whose bodies have been very badly burned in accidents, cooking accidents, things like that, and people who really need help, and there just is not a medical infrastructure there to help them.
Yes, Mary Charlotte, that's true. Because I am the person who refused to forget where he came from, and also refused to not see the suffering of other people. So what happened is that since 2009, we've been raising funds in the in the community of Santa Fe. We start with mobility project. And I want to thank Marcy Davis of Super Prison, who was supporting me and is the person who trusts me in this project. She follows me everywhere. Anything I want to do in Africa for organization here in Santa Fe, she always there to support my work and host my organization to raise funds because we trust each other. And then last year we had a very big gig. We had 100 wheelchairs donated to us to give to people with polio in rainforest. So then now people are allowed to move around with wheelchairs. They don't have to be carried like babies because it's such a humiliation for people with disabilities to go to the bathroom. They have to carry. It wasn't so fun. So we have accomplished that. And then these women, now every morning in the village, they're sitting at my front door. And then my sister-in-law hitting my door and say, you have a visitor. And they're the same people every day with... They are wounded, they have very bad injuries, and then they're begging me to help them. And then I say, I'm just an activist, I'm only artist. Did you realize that I sell artwork to come here every summer, and I don't want to forget this country where they kick me out of here. So I just want to come here because I like this place. This is my childhood memories. Then I will try, when I go back to America, I'm trying to ask my friend to come and support you. I will see what I can do. I can't promise anything, which I'm doing right now. So yeah. I don't want to forget. I want to support these women. I want also people to come and you know, get involved in this project. So that's what I want to do. Another thing I have to say is that it wasn't easy for me to start an organization like this in the U.S. because when I first came here, I was saying that I just have to sell art and run this program myself. I'm ashamed to raise funds because I'm not from the culture where people donate. And then somebody told me, oh my God, you're saying something terrible because here in America, people want to help, but they don't know how. So if they trust you, they will be able to donate to your organization, which I'm doing every year in Santa Fe. So every year we're improving this project.
One of the things I think that's so important to talk about in your project is that it's a very direct person-to-person kind of thing.
Right,
so
right.
You have talked on this program before, and you've talked to a lot of people about how when you donate one wheelchair, then one person gets to actually have an independent life, and
right.
So does that person's family, who have up until that point been literally carrying them around because
right.
they don't have
right.
a wheelchair or anything like that. So suddenly, not only one person, but a whole family
yeah.
gets liberated, and there is no middleman, and there is no
there is
sort
nothing,
of fundraising
yeah.
letters and postage and all these kinds of administrators and buildings and rent. I mean, it goes straight
right.
through you.
Yeah.
And you're not getting rich doing it.
No, not at all. And also, the reason why I'm on Facebook, I have over 1,000 friends, and all my picture can be accessed by anyone. If
yeah.
you're on Facebook, you can just go in my profile and click on picture and see what I'm doing in Cameroon. So I am not taking money to another direction. And people have come with me, people from Santa Fe and people from other parts of the globe, even in New York. I right now connected the local surgeon with the Drexel University Global Health from Philadelphia, so we're going to clean water in the community. So when I go with people who are allowed to come because this project is an inclusive project. And people who donate, if somebody in Santa Fe donate a serious money, he's allowed to come with me. I'll take him and take him to the local chief and introduce him and tell him, this is my friend in America who donated to this project. He come in to check to make sure that we're running good programs. So this project is a very inclusive project. And you can see the picture in Facebook. So after 6 months, we return pictures, information, and anything, and the thank you letters, too.
So all of this, basically, if anybody wants to donate and come to this performance, that's what's going to happen. That's where
yep.
whatever
yep.
penny or dollar or
$100, yeah.
$1,000 or $1 million you donate.
The money will go to the good schools.
Friday.
And they can also donate online, hitip.org, yes.
Yeah, and
yes.
we'll give all that information at the
sure.
end. Now, this is all Friday the 24th of February from 5 to 8:30 at El Museo Cultural here in Santa Fe. Now, you're also doing things, you've been teaching young children in the school systems, in the public school systems here in Santa Fe.
Right.
And you're going to be teaching a class in the fall called Art as a Form of Social Justice and Critical Thinking.
Yes.
And
yes.
So that's more for young adults, basically.
Yeah, yeah, that's for the community college in this coming fall. And my friend Michelle Hesbrook gave me an opportunity to open me a position for classes. So I'm going to be teaching cartoons and recycling art because I think we have to care about environment. That's one of the work that I do here because sometimes global community organizer doesn't sound something that people hear every day, but it just means that I'm from Africa and I live in the U.S. I spend more time here in Santa Fe, and while I'm in Santa Fe, I want to get involved in the community, do work. So I go to schools and I teach them art. I teach them how to recycle anything in the daily life, turn it into art. And this is my 11th year teaching. So then I also open mind of other people because sometimes I hike around Santa Fe here and I see people wrapping poop of dogs in the nature in the plastic. So it's kind of feel like the common sense is gone. This should be made in the urban area, not in the bush, because nobody will pick it up there.
Right.
So then I want to grow the minds because the reason why I'm travel is because I want to see how people think. So, and that's one of the reasons why I came to Santa Fe, to the Santa Fe Art Institute for a residency program. And I never left because I always come back here because I feel strong energy. I feel that people are very receptive about what I do. So I also invite them to see my political cartoon at El Museo Cultural until the end of February.
Yeah, and so that's another thing. Your political cartoons, which are in English, are being exhibited at El Museo.
Right.
Until the end of February, and you take on American politics as well as African politics.
Why not? Why not? Because I also become a part of American culture, and I'm also, this is Black History Month show, and I'm showing with Greta McGill, which I'm African-American, and you, Santa Fe-based artist and writer, so I'm showing with her. So her work is responding to mine, and I'm focused on American policy because that's how I see life here. I'm part of this community, you know. I'm going to be voting in the coming years, but I want to influence the vote before we get there. So
right.
I want people to come and see how an African intellectual sees American policy in the year of 2012 election. So that's very interesting for them to experience.
So tell us a little bit more about what your classes with the young people are like. I mean, in this day and age where everybody's talking about the failures of our educational system, you're getting these kids so excited that they're weeping because you're leaving for the summer. What are you doing with these kids?
So I'm arriving as an artist in the room because also I have to say that they see me as a Black artist and they never been in touch with a Black person before. I can see that in the eyes because I am not even an artist. I am passionate about people first. Before I become an artist, because I grew up in a very big family and I love people. That's my first passion, loving people. So when I connect with the kids, I also connect with the spirit that I am, you know, because I am a kid. So what we teach art, we recycle anything that we see in daily life, toothpaste, you know, we recycle keys and rolling paper towels and cardboard, and also we transform sand into different color and we paint with it. On cardboard, so we use white glue to paint with it, and it's very simple language of art. So then you can also see the transformation in the eye because the teachers are telling me now that, you know, the parents are getting away of saying, who is this guy working in school and teaching the kids, because we don't have other conversation on the dinner table only about African art or recycling art in school. I want to thank Amy Suma, the head of the program at the Santa Fe Public School, and also the teacher who worked with me. I think of Ronnie Rohr, I think of Ms. Roy Bell and Sarah Gilman or Gretel of the Kearney School. So those are the teachers who invite me in school to have a transformation for the children in this community, and they really, really, really love it.
I think a theme that is coming up over and over and over again that I'm seeing is that art has transformed from an individual activity to a community activity, and that its power is in sharing with each other.
Right.
And that's always been true for, let's say, theater and for orchestras,
right,
and things like that. But now all the arts, visual arts, every kind of art, it is a kind of people coming together and not only looking at how they can do a cool group project with each other, but how that relates to the world they're living in.
Yeah, it's also connected how people see life every day, you know. And do not forget that art saved me from what my story have been, because if I didn't have art to make that therapy, maybe I'll be hurting other people today, or I'll be in jail, arrested, and closed out.
Right.
So then this process of creativity make me make my process of resilience successful, because I'm the person who got hurt, but I didn't want to be banned by victimization. So I just want to liberate myself and go out and tell other people, you have to make that transformation, because the fact that people hurt you when you was a child, you have to hurt other people, is not what I believe in. I believe in something that you can cut the cordon, the umbilical cordon, and move on, make your own process. And that's what I want to teach the kids. You know, we all have our struggle, but if we see life differently, and then we make it there.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me that you have, in coming to the United States, as you said, it kind of taken off the victim cloak that you might have been wearing at some point, having been abused, having been a political prisoner and all that. But I mean, I think it's also important to know that when you're teaching these kids, for them to know, you've been through probably worse than any of them has ever been through. And this is what you came out like. And whatever their stories are, they can basically come out however they want.
Yeah. And also, I can also see that the way that, you know, I had a father that who didn't allow me to draw anything because of his beliefs. So, and then I was saved from him by women, by my mother, who took me to her village. And then I grew up with all these women who taught me that I should always read the sign of space and time, because it's the two elements of life that we can control. You know what I'm saying? Like, when it's time for you to go, it's time for you to go. And then if you're using a space, you can't control that space. You can't quantify it. So then they taught me that. And then they also taught me I can feel the energy, and I know myself. I know my weakness and what I'm powerful in, and then trying to manage it. You know, like you fall in the river and then you see that the waves are stronger than you. What you do, you let yourself go and wait the moment that you hang yourself in any branch of the tree and save your life. So that's the kind of philosophy that I was taught when I was a kid in. And it gave me this sense of combativity, you know, like if I can stand every morning and walk out of the door, I can make that change happen. If I can talk with somebody, connect with the society, then I know that something will happen. And that's what I want to teach these kids, you know. I want to tell them, life is not easy, but what you need to do is to connect with other humans and make that change happen. It's very, very important to reach out.
Issa Nyafaga is an artist, performer. He's a global community organizer, and you can meet him and be part of the whole wonderful project that he's involved in this Friday, the 24th of February, from 5 to 8:30 in the evening at El Museo Cultural, which is right on Paseo de Peralta in Santa Fe. And I will put on my website, santafe.radiocafe.org, the way that they can connect to you, to your Facebook, and find out more about your projects.
Yes. I can end up this program to thank all my supporters, mostly Maria El Museo Cultural, who have been listening to the show. She's been supporting us every single year to come and perform there. I want to thank also Adam McKinney. He's one of the performer in town who's going to present the evening, and also Greta McGill, who presenting the show with me, my friend Patty Sato, people who have been supporting me. I think of Carol Ware and Bahid and all these people, Christine Kalangis, and prep school when I'm going to be these coming days for a forum. So please come to the show and experience what I do, and also be part of it. Just not come and donate, but you have to be part of it. Follow us on Facebook and connect with us, call us, and go to our website and check the project and donate. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Issa,
okay,
for
pleasure,
being
man.
Here.
Pleasure. Thank you.